The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. We've talked about everything today, haven't we? It's been a busy, busy, busy Friday.
Yes.
We'll get to talking a couple more things to talk about William Barr and play some more audio from him for everybody waking up and some of the things that we talked about there.
What was the story? That interview, is the full interview going to air on CBS this morning, later this morning. We wondered yesterday on the program when he would make a statement. We knew that there would be a response, and of course, this isn't just an official statement. It's an interview, so there's a back and forth here. It is his first interview with a major network. Can we call them major networks anymore? What is a major network today?
Anything but CNN and MSNBC.
So, exactly. Ratings drop. So, anyway, he was in Alaska.
And Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay. And did the interview. It's so funny because when I saw the still shot, I thought, that's a fireplace in the background. He's wearing a vest. He's still in Alaska.
Yeah.
So, anyway, he sat down with CBS and we'll have some of those comments here in a moment, but clearly there had to be, and we thought there would be, based on what Mueller's statement, there would be some kind of response by the AG, and we'll hear what he has to say.
Oregon is loaded with pot.
Too much weed.
Too much weed. Here's a headline. Oregon awash in marijuana.
Yeah.
Takes steps to curb production.
Wow. Why not take steps to increase demand? I think you're going about it wrong.
Well, the supply side is taken care of. We need the demand side apparently needs to go up.
You people aren't getting high enough. Come on.
More people in Oregon need to get high, apparently. Right. They're glad it was so much weed that if growing were to stop today, it would take more than 6 years, by one estimate, to smoke or eat it all.
Wait a minute. Do they mean one guy? or average public consumption, I guess, is what they're basing that on.
5 years after voters legalized recreational marijuana, lawmakers are moving to give the Oregon Liquor Control Commission more leeway to deny new pot-growing licenses based on supply and demand. The bill, which passed the Senate, and as now is before the House, is aimed not just at reducing the huge surplus. Hey, man, the state stash got too big, but at preventing diversion of unsold legal marijuana back into the black market, which probably with law enforcement is a concern. And also, if you have that much, it's going to cross state lines.
I'm guessing. You can't do that. So what? That's interesting. I guess this is a part of it that I never really considered, having too much weed. But the fact that you can't sell it, they can't move it across state lines.
Right.
So there's nothing else to do but curb production.
The harsh reality is we have too much product on the market, said the governor. Supply is running twice as high as demand, meaning that the surplus from last year's harvest alone could amount to roughly 2.3 million pounds of marijuana. That's the equivalent of over 1 billion joints.
Wow.
Oregon has one of the highest such imbalances among the 10 states that have legalized recreational marijuana since 2012. in part because it had a big head start in the weed business.
I get it.
Did you get the accent on head?
Yeah.
With its moist climate and rich soil. Ah, this is where you look in the history books, the rich soil of the Willamette Valley.
There you go.
Oregon has a long history of pot growing. When it became legal, many outlaw growers went legit. Others jumped into the business. They are now all cultivating weed in a multiple of fields, greenhouses, and converted factories with 1,123 active producer license issued by the Oregon Liquor Commission over the past 3 years.
Okay, so here's my question. What about the black market demand or black market supply in this case? How is that changing things? Because we talk about other states that have legalized it and what's happened there. You see the taxation on it, and the competition would be, which is the black market, lowering their prices. And are they flooding the streets with a bunch of pot? Because think about if you're the cartels or, you know, I don't know, just a black market dealer, right?
Oh, yeah. The reverse.
One of the things, well,
the black market's not selling to you. The growers would be incentivized. Here's another point here, too. Mm-hmm. The growers might be incentivized to sell to the black market because, and I never thought about this, just read this here in the article, growers can't file bankruptcy.
Mm. Right. So you just shut the doors and go home. If you've got a business, you can't. Oh, wow. Okay, so
growers cannot seek federal bankruptcy protection.
Right.
Pot is still illegal under federal law.
Okay, so if you're the black market, you're thinking flood the supply. Put the legal market out of business. Look at OPEC, a different kind of cartel. Sorry, I just had to.
No, that's
that
funny. I'm sorry, that's funny. That was
speaking of cartels. Look at OPEC. But
I know funny.
Lieutenant Steve.
Lieutenant Steve knows funny, and that's funny.
So what they did when we started coming up with new technologies and in our domestic production on energy years ago. The cartels warned, well, we will flood the market. If you start using more green energy and producing your own, we'll flood the world market, drive prices down, and drive you out of business. Well, the answer was, oh, yeah. and essentially, the energy production technology that came about allowed for domestic producers to lower their cost per barrel in terms of production. Well, if you're of the same mindset, if you're, you know, and let's face it, I mean, the cartels in Mexico, but anybody who is supplying weed illegally would look at it, your only hope of survival, right, is to compete. But how do you compete long term? Well, you make it a huge disadvantage for the domestic or the legal producers in that state. And you flood the market with supply. And it's not that they're going to, that the government, in this case the state, is going to be able to monitor that supply, because you can't really do that. It's that the user, the end user, is going to have plenty of supply of their own. They're not going to go to the store for it and buy it legally. So business is down, market is flooded with supply. Curb production, profits are down, boom. And I don't know if it works in the end, but certainly has an effect. I don't know if that's at play here, but certainly we've seen it happen in other scenarios.
I was telling you during our pre-show meeting that I'm supposed to go to a wedding.
Mm.
Valentine's Day weekend.
Mm. Okay.
My old producer, Leafy. By the way, nothing to do with, you know, the leaf.
Right.
You know, we're talking about weed.
What about his brother, Bud? Are you sure about
no,
that?
No, it's a nickname from his real last name.
Oh, okay.
But I was telling you that, because I'll be there for a couple of days, and I was like, I'll be in Portland. I was like, I'd still be afraid to walk in to one of the, just to see what they're like. Because I haven't been to a state where pot is legal, and I haven't walked into any of the distributors.
I've been to the states that have legalized it, but I still haven't come across a dispensary.
I was thinking, you know, just inquisitive to walk in just to see how they sell it.
Mm-hmm. I just want to look at the people that are shopping. I would love to be the proverbial fly on the wall just to watch the process of what that is like.
I know it's legal, and we don't live
in a legal state, right. So we have no idea.
Well, here's the point. I can't even get vodka.
Mm. Right. I can't either.
I can't get vodka legally in my town, so it would be just weird to walk into a place, and even though it's legal, and you know, walk in, just you know, browse around, and I want to see the claims that they're making.
Right.
That's what I'm really interested. I mean, how are they marketing it? What are the claims that they're? And this goes back. What was that show that was on? Remember, probably about 5 years ago, when they first legalized it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember there was that show about, you know, the legal marijuana and all the claims that they were making.
Right.
Oh, this one you can take and it doesn't make you paranoid, but it gets you really high.
The different strains.
Yeah, the different strains and everything else. And this does this and this medicinally helps that or this. I just want to see the claims that they're making.
I saw a documentary. This is a few years ago. And they talked about in other parts of the world, Amsterdam, it's legal, but there are limitations, right? And they were talking about the people who supply the different seeds for the different strains and then coming up with all the hybrids. And I'm thinking, all right, I know zero about it. I have no idea. I know you put a seed in the ground with great soil like they have in Oregon, and you water it. A lot. Other than that, how do you really come up with that strain and then say, well, this is going to be the effect and that is the effect, given the fact that our chemistry as people is a little bit different for each individual? Again, I have no idea. There's a lot to learn, but a million questions for that side of it. I don't know, again, how you change the dynamics of the marketplace for marijuana in something like this. I suspect the legal industry is always going to be around, but I don't know how you squash the illegal side of it. I don't know how you do that.
Yeah. Like we said, every state that's legalized it, fascinating challenges.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
the California experiment is one of the. By the way, they actually are experimenting with drugs, aren't they?
Finally, it's an actual experiment. Hey,
when you see the fact of we're lowering the taxes, but you said it a long time ago, and you must have been very sober when you said it.
Well, I doubt that.
but you said, because people said, tax it and sell it, and tax it and sell it, and tax it and sell it, and tax it, and you said...
Legalize it and tax it.
What'd
I say? Yeah, tax it and sell it. But legalize it and tax it.
Right. Legalize it and tax it. Mm-hmm. And you said, no, legalize it and sell it.
That's it.
You said, because you're going to get to the point that everybody's jumping on every single... There is this illusion that by selling drugs, we're going to take care of the entire budgets of all the states and localities and federal government, and that couldn't be further from the truth. But what you said was, if everybody jumps on to tax it, then you're going to find out that the cartels will still have huge influence on the market, and that's exactly what happened in California.
Yeah.
Where now
yeah.
they're saying, well, no, we've got to reduce taxes on and I was, has that also happened in Colorado where they're talking about the fact they need to reduce taxes?
Mm.
I
yeah.
believe it also
right.
was going yeah. on there, too. So, and you called it early on. You said everybody's going to jump on it. And it's like, no, just legalize it and sell it. But
right.
if you legalize it and tax it, and that's the focus of government, mm. well, then they're going to tax it.
Yeah, you're begging for them to tax it, and they'll do that at every turn. You know, it was I was watching a documentary series. It was a limited series. I think it was on Netflix. It was. And I don't have the name of it in front of you, but they were talking to people at all levels of major drug deals, right? International. But in Mexico, it was people who were moving marijuana across the border, right? And it's bulky, so it's a lot tougher to do. But there was one drug mule that was talking about, you know, what I've got on my back only cost a fraction in Mexico. In terms of the cost of it, it's very small. Once I get it into the States, it's huge. You know, and it was, I don't know, it was a huge backpack full of pot. The point being is that the cartel has a huge margin they can play with, and they do already have influence. I don't know how you compete against that, because some were calling for legalization saying, well, it'll be the end of cartels. No, it won't.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Your pump for summer, but are your tires? As the temperature outside goes up, so does the importance of tire maintenance. The key to staying on the road this summer is to stay on top of regular tire inspections. If your truck isn't equipped with a tire pressure monitoring system, invest in a quality tire gauge. Check your tire pressure before and after every route while the tires are cold. Measuring tire pressure while they're hot can give an inaccurate reading, since tire pressure increases as tires get warmer, especially during use. Pressure levels should match the manufacturer recommended cold PSI level, which you can find on the sidewall of your tires. Catching under or overinflated tires early on is the key to minimizing downtime this summer. Stop into a TA truck service near you for all of your tire service needs today.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. My favorite story that came out yesterday, New York Times bans reporters from CNN's Don Lemon, MSNBC's Maddow shows for being too partisan. That's right, the New York Times.
Hmm.
Vanity Fair published an explosive report, a bombshell.
Bombshell, huh?
Which alleged MSNBC's Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell, as well as CNN anchor Don Lemon, made the newspaper's no-go list. The magazine began its report by alleging the Times financial editor had initially accepted an invitation to appear on the Rachel Maddow show May 20th to discuss a report involving President Trump and son-in-law Jared Kushner's transactions with Deutsche Bank, but had to ultimately turn down the appearance after he informed the communications department. Vanity Fair's report is based on information from sources inside the New York Times. According to the magazine, the Times was wary of how viewers might perceive a down-the-middle journalist like the financial editor talking politics with the mega ideological host like Rachel Maddow, Vanity Fair's media correspondent Joe Pompeo wrote.
So the New York Times is worried about appearing too biased?
Yes.
There is too much weed in this world. Clearly. I think that's evident. There, if you needed evidence, that's it right there. I'm just wondering how many people at the New York Times are smoking it.
The Bona Show.
And he's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Excerpts of the CBS interview that Attorney General William Barr did with the network will be on later this morning. But the actual interview excerpts so have come out. We have them. Here is William Barr talking to CBS about Russian collusion and the Mueller statement.
He could have reached a conclusion. The opinion says you cannot indict a president while he's in office, but he could have reached a decision as to whether it was criminal activity. But he had his reasons for not doing it, which he explained. I'm not sure what he was suggesting, but, you know, the Department of Justice doesn't use our powers of investigating crimes as an adjunct to Congress. We live in a hyper-partisan age where people no longer really pay attention to the substance of what's said, but as to who says it and what side they're on and what its political ramifications are. The Department of Justice is all about the law and the facts and the substance, and I'm going to make the decisions based on the law and the facts. When he didn't make a decision, the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, and I felt it was necessary for us as the heads of the department to reach that decision.
You know, that was to us the biggest thing from yesterday, because we called out the former special counsel, Robert Mueller, on that and said what he's saying is not true.
Right.
That and we were more blunt today and calling it what it is, a lie. When he said that he did not come to a conclusion as to whether a criminal act had happened, simply because the Constitution states that you cannot indict a sitting president. We said, well, that's bogus. You don't have to indict. Your whole job was to come to a conclusion as to whether laws were broken.
Right.
And you could have done that, and you did not do that. Now, the question is, why did you lie about it? That's the big question. Why did you lie about it?
He read a prepared statement.
Right. So this was premeditated. Why did you say something that is not true? You said you could not come to a conclusion because you can't indict. That was stupid, because coming to a conclusion is not indicting.
Right.
And no one seemed to ask that question yesterday, or nobody in the media seemed to wish to want to have that discussion. Now, maybe you have Democrats asking that question, because Democrats saying many unanswered questions, he needs to testify before Congress. Mm-hmm. Republicans right. seem to be very quiet on it. William Barr seems to say, hey, you know, he can do whatever he wants. I'm going to do it. It was, you know, his report. And so he said what he wanted. We didn't buy it. We didn't buy the conclusion, right. because as he was almost word for word what we said.
Yep.
You're not indicting. You just give a conclusion. It's not an indictment of the president. That's, you know, but he had his reasons not to do it, which were based on the fact that the president can't be indicted. Nobody was indicting and asking you to indict the president.
Nope. You were assigned to determine if there were any Americans, anyone in the Trump campaign associated with the Russians, working with the Russians to illegally influence or change the outcome of the election.
Right.
And, of course, the tail end of it, which was anything associated with that or anything else that you find along the way, which is kind of how it's phrased at the end, which I thought was a bit broad. But that would include, of course, what? Obstruction.
Yes.
So collusion, obstruction. Those are your two main points.
Nowhere did it say that you have a mandate to indict the president.
Right.
So that's the question that we have. And again, in connecting the dots, we have to ask the question, what happened in the last, has anything gone on in the last month and a half that has scared the former special troll, as we call him?
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems to me that obviously, and look, I know that Barr is going to say, you know, I don't know why he did that, but our role of the Justice Department is not to, you know, imply that we're handing off something, you know, hey, we might have something, now we're handing it off to you. Mm. And we, by the way, we said that yesterday. Right. That was completely and totally unprofessional to imply that. Well, there's other ways to punish. You're not supposed to. Your job is to simply find one. If you ever wanted evidence that Robert Mueller was not acting as a law enforcement officer, but as a political hack, you can pick out instance after instance after instance from the statement that he made two days ago.
Yep. And it was very simple. Yes or no?
Look,
did someone break the law?
Behind the scenes, I can guarantee Barr is saying he's political. And I really wonder if what is making Mueller nervous is the fact that why did he imply to Congress that it's up to you to impeach? Why did he do that? We think it's because he wants as much noise to be made as possible. So whatever happens, whatever coming down the pike, and he probably knows what's happening, we can go back to the fact that he was FBI director between 2011 and 2013 when the FISA court, that was part of the time span where the FISA court rebuked the Obama administration, and that means the FBI, because they are deeply involved in getting FISA warrants, and that was part of the time span that the FISA court rebuked the Obama administration, and Mueller was FBI director. Because it's simple, and we said this earlier in the show. If Mueller had come out and said, for example, sorry, there is no evidence of obstruction of justice here. There's no evidence. There was no underlying crime. Basically the same thing Barr said. There was no underlying crime. Mm-hmm. There was no crime to obstruct, because anything the president did was just words or actions and behavior that he is constitutionally authorized to do, and nothing ended up being obstructed anyway. And people have asked to look at the intent. Well, what's the intent when we looked and there was no collusion?
Right.
So there was no intent, there was no obstruction, there was no underlying crime, and there was no crime destroying evidence.
Right.
There was no crime to destroy or obstruct any evidence in it. So, sorry, there's nothing there. And he could have walked away, and it would have been the end of it.
We found no evidence of crime.
No evidence of crime. And you walk away from it. Why didn't he do that? Or because the other way is, when he said that you can't indict a president, well, here's how you would go about it. And we gave the example earlier, and I'll give it again. Now, we're giving more of an absurd example just to make the point here, to make it easy for everybody to understand. And I was thinking of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the movie with Wesley Snipes. Remember, the one assistant is murdered inside the White House.
Right.
Let's say somebody's murdered inside the White House, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And just any president, you know, they find out during the investigation, because investigation would be done, that the president's DNA is all over it.
Mm-hmm.
President's DNA is on the murder weapon.
Mm-hmm.
President's fingerprints is on the murder weapon. The president did it. Would the special prosecutor looking into that say, sorry, I'm not going to give a report either way because I can't, because the Justice Department can't indict a sitting president.
Right.
No. The proper way would be exactly what Barr's been stating. The proper thing would be to say, yes, here's the evidence that we have. President's DNA on the murder weapon. Boom. And all the other evidence that we have. We believe there's enough evidence to show that the president is the number one suspect in murdering this individual. He's not indicting. He's simply stating it. At that point, what happens?
Impeachment.
At that point, the special counsel goes before the House. They present the evidence. There is no defense in it, but at that point, they then impeach, and the Senate would remove from office. Then the legal wheels would start turning. Then at that point, the president, who is no longer president, would get his defense, and the prosecution would go at it, and then you would go through the judicial process. That's how it happens. That's why everything that Mueller said was bogus. That's why we know Mueller was lying. So you have to ask, after 2.5 years, why did the special counsel lie? And such an obvious lie to anybody who has ever watched Law and Order once.
If you've watched The Simpsons a couple of times,
if you watch,
I mean,
if
wait
you,
a minute.
If you watch Night Court.
Yeah, exactly. because it's this, it really is insane. But when there is a great political agenda at work, combined quite possibly with the CYA element, creating, in this case, trying to create flack in order to give yourself cover. Again, possibility. We don't know if that's happening. We'll wait and see what Barr does and if that is connected at all, ultimately. But we do know it is documented that the FISA courts took issue with the Justice Department, which included Robert Mueller as FBI director. Having said that, you put this puzzle together, and I'm telling you, none of it makes sense of what happened. The statement, the entire statement. By the way, I got to stick by this. Mueller on Wednesday, I believe, thought he was helping his agenda, maybe helping the impeachment cause. I'm not convinced. I don't know if they're going to move forward with impeachment or not. But this changes everything with where they were going. Remember,
The impeachment rhetoric was not as loud as I thought it was going to be yesterday.
It wasn't. Speaker Pelosi sounding a bit more reserved on the idea again. But remember, Nadler had changed obstruction, and Pelosi was part of that too, in the back and forth in issuing statements and talking about it. Obstruction had become now the fact that McGahn and Barr were not going to respond and show up when they were subpoenaed to do so in Congress. That's obstruction. So they changed the definition of it. It's a different obstruction. Well, Mueller moved it back. They had moved away from the original obstruction for a reason. And what was it? Well, because they knew they couldn't really put a case together on impeachment there. Right. So what do? You issue subpoenas that you know they're not going to show up and respond to. You know the AG is not going to break, because he would have to break the law in order to fulfill the terms of that subpoena. They wanted him to show up and give the fully unredacted report. Well, lawfully, he can't do that. They also wanted him to testify before the staff attorneys. He wasn't going to do that because he owes them nothing.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I spent a little time yesterday when I woke up, and I was just thinking, and this, after I was up for a couple of hours, but from the time I woke up to just paying attention to the news yesterday and thinking of, you know, Robert Mueller's statement and the reaction to it, and when I noticed that really nobody is talking about the fact that what he was saying was a lie, that he couldn't make a decision because you can't indict. And I thought, everybody in the legal profession, even if you aren't even in the legal profession, knows that's BS. Everyone. It was so obvious. And yeah. And he keeps trying to he continues to try to sell that. And that to me, that became the biggest question. Why is Robert Mueller telling the most obvious lie in the world that the only reason he didn't come to a conclusion to charge the president was because the Constitution dictates that he can't indict, when that wasn't his responsibility and he didn't have to indict? All he had to do is put down the facts and say, these are connecting the dots showing the president committed this crime.
Right, right.
Why did he lie? And why was it, forget about the lie, they lie all the time in Washington. Why was it such an obvious lie from him?
Right.
I think I might know why, but as you say.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE, and the world, too. Because you can listen to us in so many different ways, 24-7. People always ask us, you guys should be on during the day. We are.
We're banned in Greece, we understand.
On many different platforms. you can listen online, on Red Eye Radio app, and a whole ton of other places. Mm-hmm. Now, in the news this morning,
he could have reached a conclusion. The opinion says you cannot indict a president while he's in office, but he could have reached a decision as to whether it was criminal activity. But he had his reasons for not doing it, which he explained. I'm not sure what he was suggesting, but, you know, the Department of Justice doesn't use our powers of investigating crimes as an...
Excuse me here. Just a little very quick problem there that we have resolved.
All right.
Okay. So we have more from William Barr here talking about Robert Mueller's statement yesterday, and talking about the fact that not sure where he was going when he talked about the fact that there are other ways that justice can work in this country, meaning impeachment.
I'm not sure what he was suggesting, but, you know, the Department of Justice doesn't use our powers of investigating crimes as an adjunct to Congress. We live in a hyperpartisan age where people no longer really pay attention to the substance of what's said, but as to who says it and what side they're on and what its political ramifications are. The Department of Justice is all about the law and the facts and the substance, and I'm going to make the decisions based on the law and the facts.
And we wondered if the Attorney General William Barr there, who, by the way, will be on CBS this morning. Those are just excerpts from the interview that he did. But you and I wondered. We said, look, he's got to come out. He's got to come out and address some of this. And he did yesterday. We'll see if he addresses all of it.
Right.
For example, but he addressed one of the most, you know, important points out there, which we have said, and we call a lie now by Robert Mueller, which, and thinking about it yesterday, such an obvious lie that he was stating that he couldn't come to a decision on whether the president committed any criminal activity because you can't indict a sitting president. And as William Barr said, well, you're not indicting. You're simply putting a report as to whether the law was broken or not.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And I thought, and I've said this a couple times, but really it got to me. I went, wow, it was such a huge lie and such an obvious lie mm-hmm. for anybody. And we said, if you watch Night Court or Law and Order, and you understand anything, okay, maybe a little bit more expertise than that. But if you understand, and anybody in the legal profession, anybody in the media understands that what he said was absolutely a lie. That, of course, a special counsel could come up with a report and say, we've connected the dots and here's where we believe the criminal activity is. And now we're giving it to the Attorney General, and this information will be provided to Congress, and you leave it at that. And then the system works. And if Congress believes that they can do impeachment, they do impeachment. And that's why we brought up the example before of a more serious crime, if a hypothetical president committed murder and a special counsel was put in to investigate it, and the special counsel found the president's DNA all over the murder victim. Would the special counsel simply come back and give a report before the American public? We could not come to a determination as to whether there was any criminal activity or not, because you can't indict a sitting president. Of course not. He would have said, we've connected the dots. The president's DNA is all over the murder weapon. We believe that the main suspect in the murder is the president of the United States. Right?
Yep. Yep.
And you don't indict. You simply, and then at that point, this evidence will be presented to the attorney general and will be presented to Congress. Well, what will happen? Well, you'll have to, you know, Congress can go through their procedure.
Right.
And then you go to the attorney general and say, the attorney general says, well, we can't indict the sitting president. And so at that point, there would be quick impeachment. By the way, the president would resign by that point, in all likelihood. But you'd have impeachment and removal from office within 24 hours.
Yep.
And then what happens? The president's a private citizen and the indictment happens. Now, we're using that extreme example to point out why we have said it's such an obvious lie from Special Counsel Robert Mueller. And it needs to be called a lie, because the American people have been dragged through this for over 2.5 years. And the special counsel, who we said was a partisan hack as soon as the report came out, because he did not go down the road, the most obvious road, if you were actually looking for collusion, where you would go down, and that's the FISA application to spy on the Trump campaign, and he never went down that road. William Barr's going down that road now, and now that we have also, as we've been talking about for the last 2 years, and we stated this, by the way, when this Robert Mueller became the special counsel, because this was after the whole FISA thing came out, and we said,
right.
Whoa,
right.
Is this the guy that you want? Everybody says he's great. Well, if you're going to be looking at the FISA warrant, we said this in the very beginning. Remember, he had FISA problems himself, according to the FISA court. We said this almost 2 years ago. So we're not surprised at all this, but you have to ask the question, why such an obvious lie from the former special counsel that everybody knows is a lie, which is why you didn't have the mainstream media really parsing that at all yesterday.
No, they're not going to go down that road, because I think they know, too. They've been heavily invested in the false narrative for 2 years. And so they are partially responsible, you know, because when you carry the water for the former administration, the left, it can come back to bite you. And it's quite possible that's where this is going. I am interested to see what else the attorney general had to say. He again talked with CBS. You just heard part of that. It's going to air. The interview will air on CBS this morning. Here later this morning, and I do wonder what else he's going to say. Clearly, a lot of that stuff is going to be kept close to the vest. You'll also notice in that interview, he's actually literally wearing a vest. But he will, if you're going through an investigation, you don't talk about all of the details. Although I think it's very clear, and he's said it, he intends to look back and make sure that this entire thing was properly predicated.
You also had Democrats coming out and wanting Robert Mueller to testify. Adam Schiff said, we look forward to Mueller's testimony before Congress. While I understand his reluctance to answer hypotheticals or deviate from the carefully worded conclusions he drew on his charging decisions, there are nevertheless a great many questions he can answer that go beyond that, including any counterintelligence issues and classified matters that were not addressed in his findings. He's not going to give you classified matters. House Democratic Caucus Chairman Representative Hakeem Jeffries also said Mueller's report was not enough. Jeffries told the New York Times that there is a difference between reading the book and seeing the movie on the big screen. But you didn't see a lot of rhetoric and not a lot really coming out from the leadership of the Democrats yesterday. I think one of the things that they're concerned with, as we've said, everybody knows it was an obvious lie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they know, the Democrats know, he will be torn apart
yeah.
in cross-examination by the Republicans. I don't think he wants anything to do with it. I really think the Democrats understand that this is something that could work completely against them, that they're better just to keep these unknown questions out there instead of having the Republicans have a shot at Mueller. And if Mueller looks really bad, then the Democrats will turn against Robert Mueller.
Right.
That's another thing that we have predicted here because he looked. I'm waiting for a Democrat to make the same case that we're making, except wanting to come to a different conclusion.
Right.
We're not wanting to, by the way, we're not wanting to come to any conclusion. We just want the truth.
That's it. And I think there's a couple of things here. The Nadler and the other top Democrats were, I believe, building a different case for impeachment, knowing that the actual Mueller report wasn't going to really go anywhere for them because they could not make the argument on obstruction. Then they started using obstruction differently. Well, McGahn and Barr did not show up when we subpoenaed them to appear before Congress. So we consider this to be obstruction, and we believe that the president is responsible, blah, blah, blah. They were building a different case until Mueller changed everything on Wednesday. So now they've got to go back to the original argument, the original Mueller thing, report, and arguments on obstruction and everything else, which they had already changed their minds on. They had already changed their approach on that, on impeachment. I think that's why leadership on the left was quiet yesterday, because, frankly, if it was the big gift for them, anybody believe they would sit on that in that first 24 hours?
Meanwhile, yesterday, in good trade news, Mike Pence was out there yesterday, the vice president, selling the USMCA deal and talking about Congress getting to work on it.
Issues in Washington, D.C. can arise, but American people should know, the people of Canada should know that our administration is absolutely committed to driving forward to seeing the Congress of the United States approve the USMCA this summer.
It might be the USCA. Hold it there, the president tweeting late yesterday. On June 10th, the United States will impose a 5% tariff on all goods coming into our country from Mexico until such time as illegal migrants coming through Mexico and into our country stop. The tariff will gradually increase until the illegal immigration problem is remedied.
Yeah.
At which time the tariffs will be removed. Details from the White House to follow.
Mm-hmm. The president of Mexico. America first is a fallacy. I expect that coming from the president of another country.
It's really, again, they're out promoting the fact that they're going to get Congress to promote the USMCA, and then this comes out, this tweet. Mm-hmm. Again, this is mixed messages coming out from the administration. Again, you and I went over the whole thing, and you know, earlier in the show, I started out by saying, I really don't want to talk about this because the president could change his mind by today. Mm-hmm. When, you know, the future markets are down, if the president puts on 5% tariffs on June 10th, 10% tariffs on July 1st, 15% on August, would it be August 1st, I think it is?
Right.
Is it the 10th or the 1st? Whatever it is.
The 10th.
Mm-hmm. Is it the 10th of each month?
June 10th. I don't know if it's right. August 10th or July 10th, but it is.
No, I'm sorry. It is the 1st, August 1st. Mm-hmm. It would tariffs would increase, 10% July 1st, mm-hmm. 15% August 1st, 20% September 1st, 25% October 1st. On all Mexican goods, you'd have a full-blown trade war with Mexico and China. At the same time, we have no idea why the president is. Well, we know why the president's doing this. He believes this will put pressure on Mexico to stop illegal immigration. The problem is you're out there selling to the Congress of the United States and the American people on the same day that this USMCA thing is going to go through. And a few hours later, boom. Nope. Sorry. Trade war with Mexico is where we're headed at this point, and not based on trade, but based on something outside of trade, which is illegal immigration, which is not in the free trade deal to begin with. This after, again, the whole debacle of the steel aluminum tariffs, which you said were the greatest things in the world and bringing in great money to the Treasury and helping our steel industry. And 10 days later, you drop them. Mixed messages coming out from the administration is not good. But the fact is, this is something that might change a week from now. Mexico says they want to sit down with the president. The president may be using this, I don't know, as a political ploy. Yeah. As, okay, we got them to sit down to talk about it, but I don't know how this goes to 25% tariffs by October 1st at the same time on all Mexican products.
Well,
by the
again,
way,
what do you expect them to do between now and June 10th? I mean, what's the measurement? What is the, I guess, how do they meet that demand of yours?
I don't know what the administration is thinking. I don't know how many. I mean, there's Pence out selling that this is going to be a deal. Mexico, Canada, the United States, all over the place yesterday selling this.
Right.
That this is a great deal. Market's feeling good. And all of a sudden, we go from only a partial China trade war to a full trade war with Mexico and a partial trade war with China, all a possibility at the same time. You're talking about an election where I wish this president to be reelected for everything that I agree with this president on and everything I disagree with him. There is no other choice. Very worried about where the economy is going. Very worried about the economic indicators that have come out and understanding that this president won by a sliver in 2016. By a sliver of the Electoral College because of a couple of 100,000 votes in a few states. That has to be a concern of this administration and the understanding that if you're out of office and the Democrats have it for 8 years, it sets back the immigration push for the longest time. This is something where you've got to convince the American people and the members of Congress. You had Beto O'Rourke out there yesterday selling, as you and I talked about, open borders. That's it. You've got a party of open borders. Convince the Mexicans. You haven't convinced the Americans yet. By the way, I'm not saying that's a fault of the president. We haven't. I'll say we because we're on the side of the president on illegal immigration. We haven't convinced. That's a better way to put it. We haven't convinced the American public at large that controlling the borders is the right thing to do because they keep electing a party that has a majority in the House that is for open borders.
Well, and here's the thing with López Obrador, the president of Mexico, he's looking at this thing, and he's already written a letter to the president, according to thehill.com, and he says, you know, that's why he said America First is a fallacy. He's basically saying we're this big international community, and we're doing everything within our power to stem the flow of people from other countries coming through Mexico. Well, that tells us right there, nothing is going to change. You already have an official response from Mexico's president on this.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue was asked about media reports that China has put purchases of U.S. soybeans on hold.
We're concerned about that. In fact, Secretary Mnuchin asked me for those numbers the other day. These are commitments that President Xi made, Vice Premier Liu He made right in front of the Oval Office desk.
His comments came during a visit to Pennsylvania.
If China can't live up to their commitments like that, then how can we expect them to live up? That's been the problem all along.
He adds that China's decision will influence how it is perceived as a reliable trading partner.
Are we going to be able to do business in a contract way where you commit to buy this many million metric tons? There's already some contracts out there that has not been delivered that are in this summer. But our expectation is they certainly buy the commitment they made directly to President Trump to his face over the 20 million metric tons.
The 20 million metric tons were what China committed to buy in the current marketing year. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Eric Carly and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, North Korea executes, according to a report from Bloomberg News, and a South Korean newspaper, executes five officials that were involved in the North Korea-United States negotiations. Some of the top negotiators were executed by Kim Jong-un because the deal was not done, because the president walked away. So we'll get to that. And other news on Russian collusion, too, all coming up.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, I think, this weekend to see where else this goes. The entire interview with CBS News' William Barr, again, airing later this morning.
Yes.
I'm interested to see what he says and also what other members of the administration say.
Pelosi, Schumer.
Anyone?
All right, very quickly, I had to correct fake news on social media yesterday.
Yeah, okay.
Somebody posted the death of the singer. I call him more of a vaudeville kind of singer, Leon Redbone.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody posted, you know, R.I.P. Leon, and then had the song Redbone by Redbone, Come and Get Your Love.
Okay.
It's like, oh. Man, I had to correct the person. I go, Leon Redbone wasn't in the band Redbone.
Okay.
But I do have a story. It's one of my favorite stories. Leon Redbone.
Okay.
There I was. And, you know, remember how he sang, was it Shine on Harvest Moon?
Mm.
Shine on, shine. Mm-hmm. So there I am, and this goes back to probably, I'm going to guess, 1984. I'm working on the Gulf Coast, okay, living between Pensacola and Fort Walton Beach in Navarre, Florida. And a friend of mine said, you know, I'm pretty new to the town. He goes, look, you've got to come down to the downtown section of Pensacola. He goes, you know, like to the place that is just like New Orleans, just like the French Quarter.
Right.
It's like a little French Quarter. Mm. So I go down there. All these number of bars. And we're there. This is like the middle of a weekday. It could have been a Friday, maybe. It was definitely a weekday, and it wasn't very crowded. And so we're walking through all these different bars, and we go through this one huge bar, and on the front it said, you know, tonight Leon Redbone. And so it's 1 o'clock. That's it. And we're walking through this huge bar, is completely empty. It's not even open yet. We're walking through, and all of a sudden he looks and goes, "Look over there," and you could look about 100 feet away where the stage is. There's Leon Redbone. With the hat on and everything else. Mm. And he's just sitting there tuning his guitar. And we're just sitting there like 100 feet away. He's not facing us. You know, he's just turned to the side. He's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
He starts doing it. He starts singing, just singing a song, almost like his own sound check. Just a moment in history.
Yeah.
It was just, and then we turned around and walked out. We never said hi. We didn't want to bother him. You know, it's like, okay, the guy looks like he's pretty intense. I always thought he was like, When I found out he died, he's 69, even though his obituary said 127. I'm not kidding, really did.
Yeah.
But I thought he was 30, 40 years older than me. I always thought he was way older than me, and he wasn't. So,
I think because he dressed like an old man.
Yes, he did. Know? No, he did.
I mean, he did. He always wore the suit with the hat.
Yep.
You know, and frankly, let me just interject this. You the hipster people of the young generation, I don't know if they still call them hipsters or not, but
yes, they do.
You're wearing that fedora wrong.
He was the original hipster.
If you're going to wear the fedora, you need to wear the suit.
Yeah.
Don't wear it with a shirt that was... looks like you got it out of your baby brother's closet. It's four sizes too small. Can we stop, by the way, with the slim fit thing? Stop that.
Fashion tips from Eric Harley.
Yeah, just stop it. And don't forget to wear pants. I think that was the idea. it was that, you know, I mean, you when you looked at him, and of course the fact that his the genre, the style was a throwback, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and he used to be on Carson. He was all over the place.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, he really was.
He did the theme for Mr. Belvedere.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay.
And I was amazed at the number of theme songs that he actually did. There was somebody else he did, too. I can't remember what the show was.
Yeah.
But he was actually, you know, worked a lot.
Right. He was on SNL fairly often.
Yes. In the all the time.
Yeah. And so he really was the original hipster, if you think about, you know, that idea of not going with a trend or doing a throwback kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
But you never thought of it as, here's the thing with him,
mm-hmm.
knowing him, you know, through my college years and after my college years, he seemed to be everywhere, but I never pegged him and said, this is what he does. It's just, it's Leon Redbone.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
This is what you said. When I was reading today, you know, vaudeville, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I just always thought it was Leon Redbone. I was sort of somebody out there who said, I'm just going to do whatever I wish to do, and this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
Hmm. So.
That's funny. there was, according to Wikipedia, and half of everything that is on Wikipedia is almost true. due to his reluctance to discuss his past, there was speculation, that Leon Redbone was an alternative identity for another performer. Two common suggestions in years past were Andy Kaufman and Frank Zappa, because he looked a bit like Frank Zappa.
Yes, he did.
He had the same features and the mustache. Not the same hair, though. So that's pretty funny. That's hilarious. And, of course, you know, Leon Redbone outlived both Frank Zappa and Andy Kaufman. But if you look at, I guess, any of the pranks that Andy Kaufman would have pulled back in the day, you could easily see it being something like a Leon Redbone. And if there was a great prank, think about this, where a guy actually has his own career, right? And your prank character has his own career.
Yeah, what's his name? Andy Kaufman.
That's
why they might have thought the insult
comedian. Yeah. And I forget the character's name. But Leon Redbone had a legit career. You know what I mean?
he was legit. Yeah.
Can you imagine Kaufman? If anybody could have pulled that off, it would have been Kaufman. I could see people saying Frank Zappa, too, because he was also very smart. You know, but I think the Zappa thing was only because he looked like Zappa. His facial features were like Zappa. So that's pretty funny, though. That's hilarious. I'd never heard that.
Tony Clifton.
Ball on right. With a tuxedo in the whole thing. Oh, my gosh.
All right, two things.
Mm-hmm.
It will be interesting to see how the White House responds today to the story that North Korea executes five officials over the failed Kim Jong-un Trump summit.
Yeah.
According to South Korean media, North Korea has executed five officials for their part in the failed second summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, according to a South Korean newspaper. Citing the newspaper, Bloomberg News reported that Kim Ho-chol, North Korea's special envoy to the United States, and four other North Korean foreign ministry officials were executed in March because of the breakdown of the February summit in Vietnam. Trump's much-anticipated summit with Kim ended abruptly without the two leaders signing any agreements over nuclear disarmament. Kim's top aide, Kim Jong-chol, is reportedly undergoing hard labor for his role in the breakdown. You and I talked about this earlier. The compliments have to end after this.
I think if the U.S. can verify this information, and I don't know why anybody would suspect that that was untrue. This did come from a report in a South Korean newspaper. Bloomberg domestically had it here in the U.S. yesterday, and then it spread like wildfire. But if it is confirmed, if it is verified by the U.S., you end all discussions with North Korea. You have to, at that point, you have to end it.
I don't know how you... Well, you make...
You can't reapproach North Korea ever again.
You may continue it on the back channels.
Well,
but you don't... You can't have the summit with the president complimenting Kim Jong-un anymore. That ends.
I don't know what you would get done on the back channels other than to send the very clear message... This isn't going to be tolerated.
I don't think, look, it's been 2 years. Mm-hmm. We didn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
And we said this from the very beginning. The president's making a gamble, as most presidents have to do. They want to take their shot. He took his shot. He admitted 2 years ago. He said, hey, I might come back a year from now and say, didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? It hasn't worked.
It's over. I mean, if they verify this information, then it's over.
Yeah.
And you have to end it, and you have to lock the door, and you have to send that very clear message that it's not going to be tolerated. We're not going to deal with you, and you ramp up the sanctions to the fullest extent possible. And you pressure the rest of the world to do the same.
The other thing is how the White House is going to respond to the fact that investors and the markets now are believing. You know, we thought when it first came out, when the president said, okay, make the tariffs and go from 10 to 25%. And then he said, okay, and if this, we can't get it resolved here, we're going to take $300 billion worth of additional products and put a 25% tariff on them. And then the markets went boom. And then the president immediately backed off on those tariffs,
mm-hmm.
and then stated that, well, we're pretty close to a deal, and was talking about a 3-week timeline. And
right.
So that sort of calmed the markets a little bit. Now with the whole thing with Mexico, Dow futures now down almost 280. They expect the stock market to open up 300 points lower today. This is worse than even a couple of weeks ago. Well, I'll put it this way. I'm not one of the people in the market, an investor that, like on Wall Street. But how the market will view this, I would think, would be just as bad or worse, because what you're talking about, you're not going to get. You know, what kind of resolution are you going to get a couple of days by June 10th? You're not.
Mm.
And in a month, you're not. And in 2 months, you're not. So either the president backs off on this, or the president of Mexico said, well, we'd like to start discussions with the United States. And you start the discussions and you say, okay, we're going to delay it again for 60 days, and then you've made your political point.
Right.
But I don't know how long you go with this, because that you've got the markets looking at this saying, oh, my God, we were worried just about China, and now you're talking about a full trade war, a complete trade war with Mexico. And you're talking about I'm going to guess it's even more than that. You're probably talking about total trade of what? $500 billion between Mexico and the United States? Part of the problem is the supply chains. You and I talked about this before.
Right.
This was talked about when we initially talked about tariffs. They said, look, the problem with tariffs are the average manufactured good that comes from the United States or comes from Mexico to the United States, the final product when it comes here is 40% American. And so when you have before that final product comes over here, it's crossed the border four times.
Over $600 billion. Total,
okay.
Two-way trade.
Okay. And this
that
would be
for 2018.
And this would be a complete trade war on
yes.
all products,
mm-hmm.
not just selected, all products.
Right.
It would affect, and the American public would feel it. So the question is, does Mexico right now say, president's bluffing? He can't take this hit a year out.
Right.
So it'll be really interesting to see what happens today, especially after they were promoting. I mean, Pence was in Canada yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, The Hill had this story. It came across late Thursday evening about the president of Mexico, Lopez Obrador, basically writing in a two-page letter to the president, with all due respect, although you have the right to express it, America First is a fallacy because until the end of times, even beyond national borders, justice and universal fraternity will prevail. He also wrote that his country is doing as much as possible to stem the flow of Central American migrants through his country to the United States without violating human rights. So he's already issued that position. He's already responded. I don't know where you go from there.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Freightliner Team Run Smart Pro Henry Albert has achieved some very impressive fuel mileage numbers. Henry shares the specs on his truck and his trailer, starting with what's under the hood.
I'm in a 2018 Cascadia Aero-X. It's powered by the integrated drivetrain Detroit Series 60 DD15, 400 horsepower, 1,750 foot-pounds of torque at 975 RPM, and that's fed into the Detroit DT12 direct drive transmission with a final axle ratio of 2.16 with active lube management, riding on Michelin X1 tires, pulling a fully aerodynamic trailer. The trailer is equipped with a nose cone. It's also equipped with full-length skirts from Fleet Engineers that go completely over the landing gear, completely over the trailer tandem, all the way to the rear bumper. The rain gutter's been plated over, and it's running a Stemco trailer tail. My main run, which is from Charlotte to Laredo, and I'm usually 60 to 65,000 pounds, I was averaging over 10 miles a gallon. It was up to 10.1.
To learn more about Henry's fuel mileage achievements, go to TeamRunSmart.com. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Can't wait for the bar interview, huh?
Yeah, that's going to air later this morning on CBS this morning. We'll see what else he has to say about the whole Mueller statement on Wednesday.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.